This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Market, New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Hammer and Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Boxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Long delay. I don't know the rule book like that. I don't know. That was a very long time.
Yeah, it was David Price. That is today's Red Sox starter, David Price, after this afternoon's 3-2 loss to the Tampa Bay Rays, which was marred by one of the dumbest things that any of us have ever seen in our entire lives. A 23-minute delay, which can be summed up as this, simply because nobody knew what the hell was going on. Welcome into the Baseball Reporters. It's Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maz tonight again. With the summertime here, means you got a lot of different permutations of the shows going on. So it's yours truly, Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Maz tonight. And this afternoon's game is where we're going to start. If your eyes weren't on it, we'll try to take you through this as best as we possibly can in breaking down what was really kind of a gutting loss in terms of killing the momentum, I feel like, that the Red Sox had going here the last couple of nights, the way that they've played the Rays, who are reeling. But after last night's game, too, which was a second consecutive excellent start for Chris Sale, McCarthy, this killed the momentum starting there and losing 3-2. But what happened in this game today? Try to take you through it here in the synopsis. The Rays in the eighth inning, with Mookie Betts, a righty, obviously, coming up to bat against Adam Kolarik. Is that how you
say it? Kolarik.
Kolarik. Adam Kolarik, a lefty. Tampa Bay's manager, Kevin Cash, brought in Chaz Rowe, a righty, which is all good, right? Okay. Yeah. Well, you could follow all that along.
Makes sense.
Cash then moved Kolarik to first base. So moves the pitcher to first base and brought him back into pitch for the next batter, Rafael Devers. Before Devers could hit, Angel Hernandez, who is the umpire? Keep that in mind. You should know that name. Unfortunately, I'm sure many of you do know that name because he is the worst umpire in all of baseball. Angel Hernandez's crew needed to figure out what the Rays lineup looked like after all of these moves. It took 23 minutes. That included getting on the phone to New York, where you would think, well, New York knows the rules. They have the rule books there. They get on the phone to the New York, and then you would think that they figured it out. But they didn't. They didn't, and you've since had Alex Cora protest the game. I don't even know if I summed that up enough, because that's really too quick of a synopsis. Because, again, this took 23 minutes and change for all of us to get figured out, and nobody, including the guys that are in charge of the game and running the game and policing the game, the umpires, led by Angel Hernandez, New York, getting on the phone to New York, the home of Major League Baseball, where all of the calls go through. No one knew how to handle this situation. So besides the fact that this was somewhat of a gutting loss for the Red Sox today, y'all had to sit through this. If you sat through this, it's the most mind-blowing thing that you've ever seen. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this in my life, slowing down a game like this. We've seen weather delays. We've seen people come out and streak. We've seen things like that. Those kind of intangibles you can't see coming. This, McCarthy, this was just sheer idiocy.
I'm embarrassed for my sport. There's no way to defend baseball on this day today, Jim. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. They simply could not figure out where the pitcher was hitting in the batting order. And it took them 23 minutes. They got on the phone with New York. Apparently, one of the reasons that conversation with New York took so long, Jim, is Angel Hernandez was explaining to them that Alex Cora was protesting the game. It was an absolute circus. And I don't know how to best sum it up other than that. It was a total circus, and I've never seen anything like what we saw today. And for a sport that has massive pace of play problems, that is the last thing baseball needed, was that display this afternoon.
Yeah, and it killed not just the momentum for the team, the way that they played the last couple of nights. It just feels like the momentum of the last couple of games that they played in terms of pace. Because last night, a good product. This afternoon was a good product. And then you have this, and it slows it down to a complete crawl. Nobody knows what's happening. So now the game is officially under protest, which is typically rare in baseball, right? You would look this up during the afternoon show. And the last time that actually you had a game under protest had to do with weather, and it's going back about 4 years, correct?
Yeah, so the last time a protest was upheld. So basically, Jim, a manager can protest a game if he feels that the umpires incorrectly applied the rules. You can't protest a game over a judgment call. If you basically say, yeah, that umpire didn't know the rules of the game, you can protest it. And if Major League Baseball says, yes, you're right, the umpire didn't know the rules, you can go back and play that game from the spot in which you were protested. So the Red Sox are hoping that they can come back and play this game today in the eighth inning. The last time a protest was upheld in baseball was 5 years ago. It had to do with the weather delay and you know, the implementation of the rules around that. Very rare. I think the last time before that was 1986. It also had to do with weather. The most famous example is the George Brett Pintar game. They actually went back and replayed it because Major League Baseball found that the umpires were in the wrong there. It's very rare.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I wonder if, you know, another concern, the Tampa Bay Rays have been, not just going into this series, they've been in a bad way, and it's like they're playing themselves out of the wild card hunt, and they've looked like a completely lost and meek, dead-ass ball club for the first couple of games of this series. I do wonder a bit if the Red Sox helped breathe life back into that team a little bit today with this win.
Yeah, sure. It was freaky, and it was fluky, and it was weird, but if you're the team coming out on the winning end, I don't know, is it something you rally around? Maybe. I mean, who knows? I would rather focus on the Red Sox, though, because it seems like every time, Jim, that you feel like, all right, they're about to kick it into high gear. They're about to go on a run where they win 12 out of 13 games, or they're about to go on a stretch where you say, I'm really going to buy in on the Red Sox. And it feels like we were on the verge of that. If they had swept the Rays today, you feel pretty differently about this team going into the Yankees series. Instead, they lose. And it's kind of the same old with the Red Sox. Every time they take a couple steps forward, they take a couple steps back.
You know, it's to use Alex Cora's words from early last week, they've been consistently inconsistent.
Sure.
That's what they have been all year. Takeaways from today's game, just quickly, and look, if you've listened to me with any regularity and you follow me on social media, you'll know I took enjoyment in watching David Price lose today. Sure, it'd be nice if the Red Sox actually won the game, but as I said, in the game against Baltimore last week, I would have been preferred to see the Red Sox win a game like 8-7, but, you know, Price gives up like five home runs and he's out of the game in an inning and a third. If he's going to turn into one of the mean girls, you know, like from high school and get into this little bitch fest with Dennis Eckersley, who essentially did nothing, had, you know, a comment with a little bit of bite to Chad Finn of the Boston Globe in that Boston Magazine piece about a week ago, and just turn into a mental patient again. Well, I'm going to go back to now openly rooting against David Price. So that today I took some sick enjoyment in. But overall, your takeaways from the game, just from a baseball perspective and not the stupidity with the umps.
Two major takeaways from the game. One, David Price was given a lead on a day where it was a pitching duel. Morton pitched really well for the Rays, and he couldn't hold it. You know, he kind of gets dinked and dunked there in the fifth inning. He gives up three runs, and all of a sudden the Red Sox lose 3-2. You need better from your ace, because he's been their ace this year. You need better from that, and, you know, against a reeling Rays team, to let them back into the ballgame where it seemed like they had no life and the Red Sox were about to cruise to a series sweep. That was totally unacceptable. Also, my other takeaway is that Kevin Cash is a complete idiot, and that has nothing to do with the way he managed his pitchers. The way the Red Sox scored their two runs today, Rafael Devers was up in a scoreless game. Runners at second and third, Kevin Cash brought the infield in. Total panic move. I don't know if he's obeying the analytics or anything, because that's what they do down there in Tampa. The Red Sox were gifted those two runs because they brought the infield in. They couldn't take advantage.
Yeah, that manager in Tampa, the shine has come off of him.
Yep.
He's turned into a pumpkin. One of the darlings of Major League Baseball last year. It looks like, again, I think, you know, he's a guy who feels like he's lost, like, the pulse of his club, too.
Yep.
Even watching some of the games against the Yankees last week, it's like, what the hell happened there?
Well, because the numbers can't identify a pulse. The numbers can't do that. If you just
slave
say, well,
to the analytics,
exactly. I bring the infield in here because the numbers say so. You've got the hottest hitter in baseball, a guy who hit it right at your second baseman last night when the infield was in, and he couldn't field it because he hit it so hard. You bring the infield in a scoreless game. The numbers tell you yes. Everything else tells you no, but he can't look at everything else. He can only look at the analytics.
But a 23-minute delay, thanks to Angel Hernandez and the umps, and nobody knowing what the hell was going on. If you didn't watch this thing today, and by now we've talked about it, you know, throughout the afternoon, and rightfully so, we're going to you know, continue to focus on it here in the Baseball Reporters tonight, and you'll see more of it in highlights, whether it's NBC Sports Boston, ESPN, wherever you get your sports highlights. You'll see that tonight, and rightfully so. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and it starts with, not arguably, the worst umpire in Major League Baseball. A guy who has that he has that label because he consistently has a terrible strike zone. He's petty. He takes things personal. It's Angel Hernandez. You know the name because he is baseball's biggest gaping a-hole. And, of course, this situation surrounded him and his crew today. So thoughts on that. And David Price's performance, let's hear from you early and often here on the Baseball Reporters at 617-779-0985. We'll lead it off with Cam in Taunton on the situation with the umps. Go ahead, Cam.
You know, Jim, you just hit on it. Why does this guy still have a job? Why does this guy still have a job? It's 20-plus years of this vindictive, inconsistent a-hole who absolutely, if anybody else in this world blew at their job the way he does, they would have been fired years ago. I was at the game earlier this year when he threw out Benintendi and Cora against the Rangers because Benintendi had turned it in when he got thrown out first and said, God, you suck. I understand. And he sued them a couple years ago because he said they were racially profiling him for not giving him crew chief positions. No, dude, you are getting crew chief positions because you're awful at your job. And that's why the only reason why they don't fire him now, because we live in the stupidest times ever. We're calling manhole covers personal covers. They don't want to deal with the racism.
Yeah,
so that's probably...
Yeah, Cam, and thanks for the call. Maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, if it was just based simply on performance, and if players and managers actually had a bit of a say in terms of, like a checks and balances system, well, he would have been long gone.
Oh, God. And he gets playoff assignments every single year, Jim. Why? Probably because they're afraid of him suing him again and making a whole issue. It was last year in the playoffs against the Yankees. He went 1-for-4 on reviews at first base.
Oh, right.
The guy has a 25% success rate. It's unbelievable. I mean, you think there are bad umpires out there, and sure, there are. But there's bad, and then there's Angel Hernandez bad. Compare him to any other official in sport, he's probably the worst. I mean, really, find me an official in sports who's as bad at his job as Angel Hernandez.
No, it's a big drop-off.
Right, exactly. I mean, in the NBA, I get, you know, that a lot of the guys are corrupt. But you just talk about pure incompetence. Nobody is in Angel Hernandez's class.
Brendan in Newburyport on David Price's performance this afternoon. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hey, Jim. I just want to talk about David Price's awful performance today. I mean, he blew that lead. And I'm a deep-down Red Sox fan, but half of me doesn't even want this game to start again because I just want to root against David Price the rest of my life. He's an a-hole at heart. Go Eck. Screw David Price. All right. See you guys.
Thanks, Brendan. Yeah, no, I'm Team Eck on that little battle. Someone, my buddy on Twitter, Black Irish, at Mint Mulatto, who's always hooked me up with great baseball stats, pointed something out. And this was something, as much as I've been hard on David Price, and I think rightfully so, sometimes gets a little bit silly with doing the voice that sounds like Kermit the Frog, McCarthy. But one thing I wouldn't get on him for was, you know, his adorable dog Astro passed away recently.
Yes.
My buddy pointed out to me, the numbers since Astro passed away, and again, keeping in mind how the fragility that you get with David Price from a mental standpoint, David Price, since his adorable dog Astro passed away, 3 starts, 15 innings, 13 runs, 16 hits, 6 walks, 4 home runs. So maybe it's not so much about the Eck thing, and maybe that's why he was a little bit oversensitive about that. Maybe that's why he was, you know, in a mood that particular day, and, you know, it's going to be lit, and he had things to say. Well, he's feeling a little bit because he lost his friend. I've been there. Look, it sucks to lose an animal. If you care about animals more than people like I do, maybe David Price is one of those types. Maybe this is why he's all of a sudden been in a bad way. It's because he's lost Astro.
Animals are better than people, Jim. There's no denying that.
They certainly are, McCarthy.
Give me a dog anytime over a human, and a cat, too.
If you want to weigh in on today's, just what a debacle. What a debacle for Major League Baseball. It wasn't even so much about the bad price by start, and that they bad start by Price. Jeez, am I going dyslexic here? As I'm talking about the bad start by David Price. It's a bad look for baseball, what happened today with the umpires, led by Angel Hernandez. 23 minutes of pure stupidity. Just gentlemen in a circle, looking at lineup cards and not knowing what the hell to do. So, your thoughts on that, David Price's start, and we have to look back at last night's start for Chris Sale, which was the opposite of Price today, and that was excellent. For 2 straight games, double-digit strikeouts, and Chris Sale also showed some balls last night and wanting to stay into the game. So we'll touch on last night's game and continue to take your calls at 617-779-0985. It is the Baseball Reporters here with Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters. News, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
One out and one on, and a swing and a miss. He put him away. There's the 10th K in the book for Chris Sale tonight. And it will be the last. Here comes Cora. It's 114 pitches, and that is a season high for Chris Sale.
Cora is on his way over to the mound, and you can see Chris Sale saying, come on, I got a couple more.
Oh, he's going to keep him in.
And there you go. There you have it.
Wow. Well, certain pitchers have that cachet to talk a manager out of it or make their case and stay in the game. Two down, the 0-1. And a liner caught out of the air by Xander Bogaerts. And that'll do it for Chris Sale. 116 pitches, but he gets through six innings in a 2-2 tie.
I went out there to take him out, and he said he had three more pitches left, you know, to leave him out there. Actually, we were going to take him out in the fifth, and he said, I'm in a group. Just let me, I got it. And trust the player, trust him, you know. He's healthy, which is the most important thing, and he was making pitches, so we trusted him.
Chris, Alex told us that you told him you had three pitches left. How'd you come up with that number?
That's how many pitches are in a punch out. He owes me one.
Nice recap put together there by Billy Lanny. Summing up last night's performance by Chris Sale and the Red Sox 5-4 win. Got a little shaky at the end over the Tampa Bay Rays, but hey, they were building some nice momentum there with a couple straight against Tampa before, you know, disaster struck today with a bad start by David Price. Or really one bad inning for David Price, and then a 23-minute just complete mess by Angel Hernandez in the umps. But dialing it back to last night, it is the Baseball Reporters here on 98.5 Sports Hub. Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maz. The Sox, again, had made it two in a row. 5-4 win, six innings, 10 strikeouts, 116 pitch outing by Chris Sale. Also get a key hit by Christian Vasquez coming off the bench in a pinch hit home run at the time to put him up 3-2 in that game. But Chris Sale's performance, the second consecutive game where he's putting up double-digit strikeouts after he had looked a little bit shaky, but it looks like real Chris Sale again. And more than anything else, and you hear Alex Cora and how Chris Sale, he's high in the pitch count, and Cora is about to go pull him from the game, and Sale's essentially like, no, F off, I'm staying in this game. That, to me, was the most impressive thing of all. Like, that was a performance last night where, you know, kudos to Cora, too, because ultimately, with the hierarchy, like, he still has it within his jurisdiction to go out there and pull him if he's trying to save him from himself. But I think that's the thing and how they have to handle Chris Sale going forward. It's, you know, damn the torpedoes. You can't be worried about him breaking down at this time of year. You just got to let him go out there and grip it and rip it. That's when you're going to get the best Chris Sale, and that's what you got last night.
They've neutered him all year long.
Been part of the problem.
Right, and I understand that they're trying to save him from himself, but I don't think Chris Sale can be effective unless he's 100% balls to the wall. We talked about it last week. Jimmy Stewart had stats. The Red Sox have been slowing him down all year. What was one of Chris Sale's greatest advantages? He got the ball and he threw it, and he kept guys off balance, and he attacked. And the Red Sox have been trying to kind of take that away from him a little bit this year. They've been babying him all year long, and to see him not only talk Cora out of taking him out of the game, to see him actually go out there for the sixth inning, because I believe he had 102 pitches to start the inning, that showed me that the Red Sox are saying, you know what, screw it. We need this guy if we're going to make the playoffs. We need him to pitch like the real Chris Sale, and we need to approach him like he's the real Chris Sale. And I think it's noteworthy that his last two starts, when they've allowed him to do that, he's pitched very well.
All right, so as good as that was for Chris Sale and Alex Cora handling that situation, then you have the Wheel of Gutless Bums, a.k.a. the Red Sox bullpen, and holy crap, they almost blew that last night, which would have been, you know, you thought today was a bit disastrous. That, if they blew that, and a start like that from Chris Sale, McCarthy, I think you'd have Red Sox fans jumping off the Tobin after last night's game. So, for those that didn't watch, we'll just take you through it here. So, Matt Barnes gets the call in the bottom half of the seventh inning, 1-2-3 inning, 9 pitches, all good. So, Brandon Workman comes up for the bottom half of the eighth, 12 pitch, 1-2-3 inning, all good.
Yep.
Well, this is where, you know, it gets a little bit curious for Alex Cora. You want a six-out save from Brandon Workman. He comes back out in the ninth, starts off with a single. Would have been a double other than Mookie Betts, you know, think they make it a decent play on it. But gets two outs, and then he walks a batter. There was a base hit right through the middle. And then all of a sudden Marcus Walden comes in with two outs, bases loaded, two-run game, four straight balls. Walks in a run. And we're looking at a one-run game, and it's like, this is – it's the Wheel of Gutless Bombs. Spin the wheel. What is happening?
It's about to be their biggest blow-up of the year.
Gets a ground out to end the game, and they get the win, and you're building a little momentum up until today. But that just goes to show you, you still can't walk away from last night's game and feel all that great about this team. At least I can't, because the bullpen is still a complete disaster. And more than anything else, where was Nathan Eovaldi? Where was Nathan Eovaldi? I thought the savior was back with this team, McCarthy.
Yeah, he's not. And the problem is he can't go on back-to-back days. And I know the Red Sox said he was available last night, but they were not going to go to him in a three-run game, which it was at the time. They did not want to go to him, which tells you everything you need to know. Either they felt he wasn't available, or they were so scared off by him getting his face ripped off the night before that they weren't prepared to go to him in a high leverage situation. Either way, this just proves once again, Jim, that the Nathan Eovaldi decision to put him in the bullpen and advertise him like he's the savior, like, you got to be kidding me with this. This guy clearly isn't ready to go. He's thrown essentially, what, like 30 pitches since April or whatever it is, probably 40 pitches, two innings total. Since Nathan Eovaldi got hurt, he's pitched. And now all of a sudden, he's supposed to come in and close games for the Red Sox or pitch in high-leverage situations. They rushed him back. They panicked. And this is what you get. You get Marcus Walden closing a game out because he wasn't available because of all of those situations.
Yeah, I think that they look at it as like, this is the guy that is going to be the guy that is the fix in the bullpen. So fine. If you're not going to add anybody else, fine. I guess, you know, I can live with that. I don't like it, but I can live with it. What I didn't like is how this whole plan was just rushed. It just felt like, so, okay, he threw, what, 11 pitches in that game in Pawtucket late last week?
19 and 11 strikes.
Okay, yeah, so that's what it was. 19 pitches, 11 strikes. So getting a little mixed up. So, okay, not even 20 pitches.
One outing.
Against in the game in Pawtucket. And then they have him on the road trip to Baltimore. They don't – where the real issue is, and Maz brought this up in the afternoon show yesterday – where you can really, again, second-guess Alex Cora and how they're handling this. Well, you score nearly 20 runs against that bad Baltimore team on Saturday night. Get him in there then to try to get some of the rust off. They don't use him in Saturday night's game. They put him in on Monday in a bit of a high-leverage situation-ish, and he's throwing wild pitches. The velocity is there, so fine, but there's still rust. There's obvious rust. And this the whole thing and how they've managed Eovaldi and trying to use him in this situation – more than anything else, McCarthy, it's rushed. They haven't handled it well.
There is basically no plan. And Maz,
that's
makes,
what it is.
Maz makes a great point. Why didn't he pitch on Saturday night? Because so Eovaldi pitched on Thursday in Pawtucket. They activated him on Saturday because they felt that he could not go on back-to-back days. Otherwise, they would have activated him for Friday. Get him in the game, get him pitching in what is essentially a rehab appearance in Baltimore. You want to have him at the big league club, fine, I get it. I wouldn't have done that. I would have kept him in Pawtucket over the weekend and activated him for this series, but whatever. The fact that he didn't pitch in that Orioles series tells you that the Red Sox basically had no approach with this, which I find inexcusable. I mean, this guy is supposed to be the savior. He's supposed to be the guy that's going to fix your bullpen. You spent a boatload of money to bring him back. Obviously, he's one of your more valuable pitchers, whether he's in the starting rotation or in the bullpen, and you have no plan or no approach to take with a guy who's had a million elbow surgeries at this point. That is entirely unacceptable to me.
Do you think that there would be any chance, and I was trying to look up the number quickly, but I think it was, say, like 54 to 3 appearances, but Andrew Cashner has actually, you know, done work in the bullpen before. Mm-hmm. Would they flip it, put Cashner into the bullpen, and make Eovaldi a starter again?
So, you know me, I've been a big proponent of bringing Eovaldi back as a starter. I didn't want to put him in the bullpen. I was a big proponent of going out and adding a relief pitcher instead of a starting pitcher. At this point, you'd have to build Eovaldi up, right? And how are you going to build him? What are you going to send him back down to the minor leagues and have him, you know, start doing rehab starts? You're too far down, you know, the path with this at this point. I think he's a bullpen arm. Maybe you stretch him out to 2 or 3 innings, but are you ever going to get him stretched out to 5, 6, 7 innings at this point? That would take a lot of work and a lot of effort. Again, I prefer him in the starting rotation, but at this point, we're here at the end of July. He's pitching one inning. This is kind of what you've got.
Nick in the car, you're next up here on the Baseball Reporters. Hey, Nick.
Hey, guys. What's going on? First off, I don't want to come off as biased, but the Red Sox, they need to be one of those wild card teams. We all saw the Rays, you know, this fall, they're coming down. Basically, every American League
The American League stinks, Nick.
Yeah, I know. Every American League leader right now in first place, East, West, Central, whatever it may be, those teams are locked in. But there's one team that I really think is going to just absolutely just mix everything up, and that is the Oakland Athletics. They have 6 to 7 guys that can absolute rake. They have an underrated pitching staff. Matter of fact, I think they can even compete for the AL West with the Astros, and you don't want to play the the Astros.
Yeah, you threw in the quick F bomb that I heard, but I appreciate the call, Nick. So you're worried about the A's. McCarthy, before the afternoon started, afternoon show started today, told me about another team that he's concerned about. We'll get to that. And last night of Major League Baseball as a whole, which included that nice performance by Chris Sale. McCarthy has a bone to pick with baseball as a whole, or people maybe not having their eyes on what was maybe the best night of the year for Major League Baseball. We'll get to that. And also, coming up in the time remaining here in the Baseball Reporters this evening, it sounds like there's not going to be a sell-off for the Red Sox, even if it all goes to hell for this team, as the Yankees come to town for a four-game set between now and the trade deadline. So we'll keep you updated on that. We'll tell you about that if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. But McCarthy gets you caught up with the hub headlines, and then he'll rant about last night and the eyes not being on a great night for Major League Baseball and what team you might have to be concerned about in the wild card race for the Red Sox. All that next on the Baseball Reporters on the Sports Hub.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzara, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, they did the pitcher moving to a position, and we felt that they made some illegal substitutions. It was a mess at one point, you know, like I wasn't even able to like keep up with Angel. So we protested the game. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, again, this today, it was something. Red Sox fall to the Tampa Bay Rays 3-2. Don't complete the sweep. Or do they? Because the game's under protest. It's the Baseball Reporters, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maz tonight. But basically, it came down to this. Eighth inning, correct?
Yes? Eighth inning.
Yeah. Angel Hernandez, who you know that name, and you shouldn't, but you do, because he's a complete a-hole. And the rest of the umpires spent 23 minutes confused about the Rays lineup and their moves. And it was absolutely... On the one end, hysterical to watch. On the other, completely embarrassing for Major League Baseball. And it slowed what was a good product today down to a grinding halt. And it's just, ugh, it's unlike anything I've ever seen, McCarthy. My 42 years and 30 plus years of watching sports and baseball, I've never seen anything like that. And I certainly hope to never again.
I've never seen anything like it either. And I mean, I've spent, you know, basically my whole life around baseball at a, you know, million different levels from major leagues to what I've never seen. A circus like today, where nobody had any clue what was going on, all over whether the pitcher was hitting in the three spot or the nine hole. So baseball can't get out of its own way.
So explain to me. So with the game under protest, and you were talking about how, you know, it's kind of rare, and you actually haven't had one overturned since going back five seasons. Mm-hmm. What happens here? So it's under protest. How would this work out? It would only pick up from the eighth inning, correct?
Yes. All right. So here is my understanding, and admittedly, it might not be a perfect understanding, but here's my understanding of how it goes. Major League Baseball now needs to review whether the umpires appropriately applied the rules. You can only protest rule violations or the implementations of the rules. You can't, you know, judgment calls, nothing like that. That can't be protested. But you can file a protest if you feel that the umpires made an error when it comes to the actual rules of the game. So if Major League Baseball finds that Angel Hernandez and crew screwed up when it comes to putting a hitter in, you know, the appropriate spot of the lineup with the loss of the designated hitter, if they find that happened, then they would go back and replay the game from the moment in which the protest occurred. So that would be eighth inning, two outs, I believe. So the Red Sox and the Rays would actually have to get together again and complete that protested game. It's extraordinarily rare. It almost never happens. It usually only happens around when you get rain delays and suspended games and stuff like that. You know, more technical things than anything.
But it would have to be played in Tampa at the drop of the same scenario. So even if that were to happen, what a giant pain in the ass.
Right.
Especially if the Red Sox start getting something going again, momentum-wise, even though it's been stop-start all season. But if they get something really going here and say they take, you know, three or four or even sweep the Yankees and they have to play that somewhere like, you know, in the middle or at the end of this 14-game stretch, what a giant pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah, it would be. But, I mean, it's happened before, and the most, I think, famous example is the George Brett Pine Tar game. It's actually, ironically, the anniversary of today. They actually had to go back and play that game from the moment after George Brett hit that home run. So, I mean, I don't know if the Red Sox go to Tampa again. I'm assuming they do. I feel like they'd go there three times. They do, so they'd probably play it as part of a doubleheader or whatever. But can you imagine, in a wild card race, going back and playing a game from the... It's a complete circus. It is.
All right, take me through a couple of things from last night. First, you know, before he swore, we took a call from a guy that said, you know, watch out for Oakland, who is currently in that second wild card spot. Tampa Bay, a game back. Red Sox, two games back with a loss today. But there's another team that's been hot as of late, 7-3 in their last 10, and, you know, it was a nice performance from one of their particular players, maybe the best player in all of Major League Baseball, maybe the best in the last 30 years. He is involved with, and that would be the LA Angels. Why?
Yeah, as to why they, I think they're in the American League wild card race. So here's the thing. The American League sucks. Tell me that the Angels are no better or no worse than the Oakland A's or the Cleveland Indians or the Tampa Bay Rays. You can't. There's a team that's, you kind of feel like they're playing for something now. You know, they've rallied around each other after losing their teammate Tyler Skaggs. Why the hell not? Really, they're only, what, a couple games out of the Red Sox right now?
Two and a half back of the Red Sox, four and a half out of that second spot.
Yeah, so why the hell not? Why can't the Angels get in, you know, in the wild card mix? Because I feel like, Jim, we've only focused on, at least in recent weeks, the Indians, the A's, and the Rays. Don't forget the Angels. They're right behind you, and they're playing good baseball, and they've come together as a team, and all that intangible stuff that you can't explain.
Yeah.
But again, tell me that they're any better or worse than the Indians or the A's or the Rays. You can't. The American League is garbage.
And as I mentioned, Mike Trout, big night for him last night as the Angels were playing the Dodgers. He was involved in what you thought was the best night for Major League Baseball as a whole on one night, and what was your beef with it?
That nobody noticed or nobody cared. And it's not, my beef isn't, Jim, with the people who didn't notice or didn't care. My beef is with baseball, that the fact that the sport has gotten to this moment. If you weren't paying attention last night in baseball, and most likely you weren't, because that's just the way it goes in 2019, the Yankees and the Twins played the best game of the year. By far, bar none. This game was wild. I think the Yankees were down like 5 runs. They scored 5 runs. Back and forth they go. Home runs all over the place. It goes to extras. Just a great game. It ends with one of the great catches of the year by Aaron Hicks. Saves the game. A sprawling diving catch in the left center field gap. An awesome game. Everything you would want as a baseball fan. Drama, excitement, you name it. Home runs, everything. Nobody noticed because it took 5 freaking hours to play, and it ended after 1 a.m. East Coast time. So it doesn't matter if you play again, like in London, the Red Sox and Yankees score 30 runs. It's crazy. It's wild. It doesn't matter if it takes 5 hours because nobody is going to watch. It doesn't matter how many home runs you have. It doesn't matter how exciting the actual game is. If it takes 5 freaking hours, that destroys your product. That game should not have taken 5 hours last night. That's a 3 hour, 3.5 hour game at the most, really. But the fact that these guys just don't throw the ball, It's a huge problem. Pace of play, again, a huge problem. And everywhere else in baseball last night, too. Pablo Sandoval walks it off. Home run for him. We had Mike Trout hitting a huge home run in L.A. last night. Like hoses a guy at the plate.
454 feet, something like that.
Just a monster home run. He hoses a guy at the plate. That game ends with Bellinger being thrown out at home plate. Just great drama across baseball last night. And nobody noticed. Nobody. That's not everybody else's fault. That's baseball's fault for putting the sport in the position that it is, and it all comes back to pace of play. Every single thing in baseball comes back to pace of play. Today, pace of play.
Yeah. So talk to me about the Yankees in this upcoming 4-game series you got that starts tomorrow as they come in again for 4. They have to wrap up their series with Minnesota tonight, which I feel like benefits the Red Sox a bit because they had the afternoon game. They also place Gary Sanchez on the injured list. If the Red Sox take 3 of 4, even sweep, are you a buyer at the trade deadline?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because if you take 3 of 4, you show that, all right, you know, things have turned around, and what that's, you go 5-2 in your most crucial stretch of the year, and, you know, the rest of the American League is kind of crumbling around you. Yeah. But ultimately, this is the biggest series of the year for the Red Sox this weekend. We saw this at about the same time last year. The Yankees came in, and they're kind of out of the race in the American League, and the Red Sox sweep them. And, you know, it was just, you know, the Red Sox ran away with it ever since. So you can have the biggest series of the year at this time of year, and that's what the Red Sox are encountering right now. Can't say I'm crazy about the pitching matchups, though. Porcello, who's sucked, goes up against Tanaka tomorrow. Advantage Yankees. Paxton against Cashner on Friday. Advantage Yankees. I'll give the Red Sox Sabathia, Rodriguez against Sabathia on Saturday and Sunday. Sale going up against Herman on Sunday. But these first two games, it feels like you have to win one of those two to get you going in a decent stretch into the weekend.
Yeah, and I haven't been all that bullish on the team the whole season. Might have been a bit premature a month in. I said the season was already over. All right, okay. Didn't consider the wild card and how bad the American League would be, and maybe I bought a little bit too much into Tampa. But I will say,
If they lose three of four, even if they split McCarthy, they should be sellers. They should absolutely be sellers at the trade deadline. You can certainly, we all know you can forget about the American League East at this point. But even if you split, that's a massive disappointment.
If you split, it's basically everything you've done all year. You've just been in the middle. You split. You don't totally fall out of it, but you don't put yourself in it. You're a seventh place team, and that's what you've been all year long. And eventually, Jim, you have to look at the Red Sox for who they are. It's not the talent on the paper. It's not everything they did last year. They're a seventh place team. They've been a seventh place team all year long. And if you split with the Yankees, you're still a seventh place team.
Yeah.
You got to make a move eventually. And I'm not talking about a trade. You got to make a move up the standings eventually.
Well, one of the more plugged in baseball talking heads today reported that no matter what happens, say even the Red Sox get swept by the Yankees in this four-game series this coming weekend, they may not be sellers. So we will touch on that as we wrap up the baseball reporters. Coming up, we got one segment to go. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. Again, you want to bitch about Angel Hernandez and that, just what a pig F that was in Tampa today. 23-minute delay because nobody knows what the hell's going on. Chris Sale's performance last night, anything we've discussed in the hour. Join us, 617-779-0985. But again, sounds like no matter what happens in this series, even if they're swept by New York, they're not going to be sellers for the trade deadline. We'll touch on that next. And the baseball reporters on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Final segment of the Baseball Reporters, 98.5 of Sports. Up again, Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Maz tonight. He returns tomorrow and Friday, though. This is typically where Maz would give you the big Y matchup of the night, but considering the game was already played, again, Red Sox fell to the Tampa Bay Rays 3-2 today, killing their momentum. Iffy start by David Price. Had really one bad inning, but really the talk of that game was the 23-minute delay of just simply because of sheer stupidity. Because Angel Hernandez and the umps really didn't know how to handle the situation that Kevin Cash and the Rays had put upon them. And, you know, having guys switch around, and we have to now look at the lineup cards, and that doesn't match, and that doesn't match. You'd figured you'd be able to figure it out once you get in touch with New York, right? Wrong. 23 minutes. What an abomination. Anyway, considering the game is already played, I still have to let you know that it would normally be the spot where we give you the big Y read, so we're going to do that. There is no matchup. The game played, so the big matchup of the game presented by Big Y World Class Market. We love Big Y World Class Market. Big Y serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. So I mentioned as we were talking about the American League wild card spot race and McCarthy now believes the Angels could be a threat. 4.5 games back of that second spot, 2.5 for the Red Sox. No matter what happens coming up here for the Red Sox, it sounds like nothing's going to happen, even if they get swept by the Yankees next week. The trade deadline, even if they end up, you know, it's worst case scenario. DEFCON 1, they lose 4 straight to the Yankees. Ah, they're going to sell off, right? Wrong. Peter Gammons, as plugged in as anybody else when it comes to Major League Baseball, on Twitter today, just about an hour ago, tweeting McCarthy, a National League GM, an unnamed National League GM, quote, "The Red Sox are not selling. Fans may not love this team, but they're not buying, giving up when they're a couple of games out of the wild card spots," end quote. What do you think of that?
I'm not surprised. I mean, this is Dave Dombrowski we're talking about here. It is not in his DNA to sell.
And there's really only been one sell-off under John Henry as well, since he's owned the team.
Right. Although, you look at Theo Epstein, he traded Nomar Garciaparra in 2004, major shakeup, traded Manny Ramirez in 2008, major shakeup. In some ways, I mean, made those teams worse on paper. Now, we know 2004 worked out brilliantly, 2008 maybe not so much. You think Dave Dombrowski has it in his DNA to make some type of major shakeup or do something bold, something that Theo Epstein would do? Because I don't think he would, because I think Dave Dombrowski is the type of guy who says, I built this team. It's a good team. I look at it on paper and I know it's good. And well, it's not working out, but it will work out because I built it, because I know what I'm doing.
Well, he's too much of an egomaniac, and he's too stubborn, too. I think he's too pot committed with this team because he's built it the way that he wanted to, and he's sold basically everything off in the farm system, so there's not much left there. I just don't think, he's too stubborn. He wouldn't do it. I'm with you on this.
No, there's no way he would.
Which is annoying, too, because if they know, especially on certain guys like J.D. Martinez, who has the opt-out, and if they have any inkling from his agent, Scott Boras, that he isn't going to be back, well, that's a guy that you could shop, and that would certainly have a market, like a team like the L.A. Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about what the Yankees did in 2016 when they sold off a few pieces. Miller and Chapman were the notable ones, and essentially retooled their farm system and got the likes of Gleyber Torres and built a contender for years to come. The Red Sox could do the same thing. And next year, Jim, you're going to need new starting pitching. You know, be it, Rick Porcello's gone, so you got to replace him. Who are you replacing him with? Because you don't have any starting pitching prospects in your system. You can get a starter for a guy like J.D. Martinez. You could get the next young pitcher who you can put in your starting rotation for years to come. I just don't think the Red Sox are that interested in looking to the future, and I don't think Dave Dombrowski is that interested in looking to the future. Let's not forget, this guy's contract is running up. John Henry said in spring training that he wanted to extend him, and it hasn't happened. How long is Dave Dombrowski interested in being around here? And is he willing to build a team for the future when he's not going to be here? I'm not so sure. That's a story that we have not been talking about enough.
Good stuff, McCarthy. Maybe you can explore that a little further when Maz returns tomorrow, as you'll be in as well, as we wrap up the baseball reporters. Always a pleasure, pal.
Anytime. Always fun, Jim.
Also want to thank Billy Lammy and Mason Souza for helping to produce the show Behind the Glass.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.